and welcome to another episode of the Philly Sports Passion Podcast with co-hosts Kyle Lutz here and Eric Jacinto joining me. And today we'll get into Phillies. Next time we'll talk some Eagles. But trade deadline coming up tomorrow afternoon at 4. Phillies have been wheeling and dealing, Eric. And obviously they picked up some pitching and, you know, they're looking to be getting a little bit more before the deadline expires. So we'll get into our thoughts on potential deals and what they've gotten so far and all that good stuff. So how are you, Eric? It's good to be back.
I'm good. How about you, Kyle?
I'm good.
Good to be back.
So you know, recently they had the a couple weeks ago they had the annual Hall of Fame ceremony in baseball, and this year four players, technically five, were inducted. There was one that was inducted into the Hall of Fame, into the Baseball Hall of Fame, and the Veterans Committee, and the other four came from the ballot from the Baseball Writers Association of America. And one of the four guys that were on the ballot this year that got inducted was former Philly, the late great Roy Halladay. Obviously spent the majority of his years, 12 years with the Blue Jays, four with the Phillies, over 200 wins. Obviously had a horrible, horrific, you know, deadly plane crash not too long ago, almost 2 years ago, actually. We're coming up on this November, and died at the young age of 40 in Florida near the coast. And his wife, Brandy, who you saw, gave a wonderful speech. And on top of Roy being elected by the writers, the voters, and in the Hall of Fame, longtime Seattle designated hitter Edgar Martinez, pitcher Mike Mussina, Yankees closer Mariano Rivera, all composed, all made up the inductees, besides Harold Baines, who was the Veterans Committee pick this year. What were your thoughts on the players that got in, before we get into the players that had missed the cut and should have made it in or shouldn't have? What were your thoughts on, you know, do you think Halladay got in too soon? What are your thoughts on some of the players that were inducted this year in the Hall of Fame and the way that they were inducted?
I think Edgar Martinez was a long time coming. I think he deserved it. Rivera, we all know he was the greatest, probably greatest closer of all time. He got in with 100% vote. He said, was it 100%?
Yeah, it was 100%. Yep.
And he was the first Hall of Famer to get 100% vote on his ever, right?
Yeah, and he actually beat out the previous record was Nolan Ryan, who had 98.8% in 1999. And, you know, for 20 years, Ryan held the record for highest percentage until Rivera. And then Mike Mussina, of course, also gets in. He kind of bounced around the American League, especially the East. He spent time with Baltimore, with the Yankees. I know he was just with those two teams, but he spent significant years with both teams. Two more years with Baltimore, 10 total, 8 with the Yankees, and had nearly 300 wins and a respectable career ERA being in the American League. What were your thoughts on him getting in? This was the sixth ballot that he had gotten on. He nearly got in last year with just over 60% of the vote, and he just made it in this year with 76.7% of the vote, needing 75%. What were your thoughts on him getting in, Mussina?
I thought Mussina deserved it. I think he was a solid pitcher all throughout his career, especially with the Orioles. and then with the Yankees, obviously. I thought he deserved it. I mean, 6 years on the ballot, I think he with the perfect timing for him to get in. As far as Roy Halladay getting in, I think it was good timing. I think it was the right move to put him in the Hall of Fame. I don't know if he would have got in if he was still alive right away, but that's not here or there, but he deserved it. Either way, he deserved it. So, and congratulations to all four of them, all five of them. I'm not going to leave out Harold Baines either. So all five of them deserved it, and congratulations to all five.
Yeah, Harold Baines, I think, is a guy that's deserving of the Veterans Committee pick, because he's kind of like a debatable case, and I can see why he didn't get voted in originally. And as you know, we were talking about this earlier, the voters can be, they kind of pick and choose, which they shouldn't. They should just go by the stats. It shouldn't be a biased pick. But I felt like Baines was in the Hall of very good. I'm happy to see him get in. But he was kind of a borderline case, which made sense for him being a Veterans Committee guy. And I think you make a point about Halladay. I think Halladay would have gotten in, but he wouldn't have gotten in the first ballot. It was such a fresh wound. Not only him dying, but the way that he died and the way that he was beloved by not only baseball, but the fans, the Phillies community, the Phillies, entire team, as well as the Blue Jays and everybody who had a part in drafting and in training for him. So I think he would have gotten in. Over 200 wins. I mean, 16 years he had and the majority of the time in the American League, he still had a pretty good ERA, 3.38. A Cy Young Award in two different leagues, which not a lot of pitchers have done. A perfect
two no-hitters.
Two no-hitters and only the second ever postseason no-hitter. And, nearly had two perfect games in a single season because he had a full count that had that walk. Ironically, it was to Jay Bruce, who became a Philly. So Halladay was kind of a special case. I feel like he got in just because I think we can all agree that, there was a certain reason, a certain set of standards, I guess is the best way to put it, for him getting in. But he definitely was deserving of getting in. The interesting thing is Edgar Martinez, he played 75% of his career as a DH, so he didn't play defense for majority of his career. He played like 500 games at like third base, and he played a handful of games at first base. But the majority of the games, for his career, all with Seattle, were batting as the DH. Do you think 10 years was enough? The fact that he was such a good hitter, do you think 10 years it kind of penalized him enough for not being a fielder as long as he did, because a lot of people would say, maybe he's not deserving because for the majority of his career, he was all he had to worry about was batting and he never fielded. Mm-hmm. But I think 10 years was probably long enough for him to be on the ballot and for him to get enough of the vote. I mean, 312 average, over 400 OBP, just solid numbers down the line. I'm not sure what you think
Absolutely.
About that, but that's how I rule it.
I think it was well overdue. I think, but there's another case going to be made in a couple of years for Big Papi, who was also a DH most of his career with the Red Sox. So it'll be interesting to see how long he will get into the Hall of Fame when he's eligible. Will they do the same thing?
He's going to be interesting because we'll get into this more in a second, because he's a steroid guy. He's a guy that did steroids and, did that play in? Because you know, he was, you know, he was confirmed as being a steroid user, I believe, in several publications. And I would,
I think he came out and admitted
kinda,
it, so.
Yeah. I'm kind of on the fence with him. I'm looking at his stats now. He had a good career, but it's, for me, it's difficult to distinguish. I would, you know, I try not to you know, be hypocritical, you know, but I, as much as I hated Bonds, I put him in because he was a Hall of Famer before the steroids, if that makes sense. And he was so good
as a pirate.
And as a, yeah, it's, to me, it's tough without looking at what year Big Papi started using. And, you know, was it right around the time when 04, 05, when Boston was, you know, starting to be really good as far as, and by really good, I mean better than the Yankees, who were a dynasty and obviously broke the championship drought in 04. You know, was it around that time when Big Papi started using, and when did he stop? So for him, it's kind of tough. I think he's definitely going to get a significant amount of votes. The question is, are people going to allow him to be in because other steroid users, like we mentioned, are already in, enshrined, inducted in, or, you know, there's going to be a lot of debate about it. So
yeah,
I find it kind of interesting. So we'll kind of get into that now, actually. The 2019 ballot, actually one more thing I wanted to get into before we get into the ballot. We talked about this earlier, and I didn't agree with Mo Rivera getting 100% of the vote. And it had nothing to do with him being a Yankee, nothing to do with that. It had to do with him being a closer. Not only that, but the fact that a guy is like Ruth and Ted Williams and Willie Mays, those types of guys, like maybe even like a Cy Young, the pitcher Cy Young. You know, those guys didn't get 100%. Who's that?
Hank Aaron.
Yeah, Henry Aaron. Yeah, him as well. Absolutely. So that's a guy that made, like, you know, a huge impression on the league, and awards were named after them. And if they didn't get 100% of the vote, and I realize there's years where the vote is like really stacked, and you have to kind of pick your poison. But you know, I can't justify it. But I don't know if you have any comments on that before we kind of continue into the. Into the ballot this year about Rivera getting 100% of the vote.
Yeah, I didn't agree that he should have got 100% because, as you said, there's guys that didn't get 100%, like Hank Aaron, the home run king, or used to be the home run king before Bonds broke it. But, and then you have Willie Mays, even Jackie Robinson, who changed the game. Babe Ruth, Ted Williams. I could go on and on. That guys that should have got 100% before Rivera, that changed the game before him.
Yeah, and, absolutely. And you know, Rivera, I think we can both agree, is, you know, the greatest closer of all time, and, you know, a class act. So, you know, nothing against him there, and he absolutely belongs as a Hall of Famer.
Yep.
I was just more against the percentage. And another interesting thing is the second year in a row that a former Philly got inducted into the Hall of Fame with Roy Halladay this year and Jim Tomei last year. And, you know, some people are coming up. I don't think – not that I know – unless Curt Schilling gets in next year, you know, and he obviously spent – a good portion of his career here, and actually we'll segue into that now, but we'll see what happens down the line for Philly's former Philly that are that could be on the Hall of Fame ballot as far as vote getters are concerned. But Curt Schilling didn't get in again this year. Roger Clemens, Barry Bonds didn't. There were four guys that didn't get inducted, that received at least 50% of the vote, you know, which is pretty significant. Larry Walker, you know, who spent a lot of time in Coors Field and with the Rockies. He spent a decade there. He had some good years with Montreal, and he was still a great hitter, don't get me wrong. And, you know, he was good at the end with St. Louis. He got 54.6%. Bonds got 59.1%. Clemens got 0.4% higher than Bonds, 59.5%. And Schilling just got just under 61%. And obviously we talked about this earlier, but it's become very political and kind of hypocritical with the voters as far as voting in and who's getting in and who's not getting voted in, because you have guys like Piazza and Pudge Rodriguez, who were great players and both great catchers, who, you know, were steroid users, who are in the Hall of Fame. But a guy like Schilling, who, to my knowledge, never did steroids, but is very, you know, outspoken. And then you have guys like Clemens and Bonds, who obviously are the two most, well, at least probably the two most well-known steroid guys that would receive votes, because I don't think anybody was voting in Sosa or McGuire. But what are your thoughts on guys like Schilling, Clemens, Bonds, those three guys specifically not getting voted in compared to other guys and their Hall of Fame cases for the future?
I think Schilling deserves it. He's won two World Series. He was part of Arizona. He was part of that duo with Randy Johnson in Arizona in 2001 when they beat the Yankees. And then he was part of the historic 2004 Red Sox and the Bloody Sox against the Yankees. Purcell was one of the greatest pitchers of all time, especially in the postseason. I mean, he didn't win any Cy Youngs, but he was great in the postseason. He was great when he counted. And then as far as Bonds and Clemens, I don't like either one of them, but they both deserve being a Hall of Fame because they were both great before the steroid era. And I think it's long overdue for both all three of them. I think all three of them should get in next year, but we'll see. And then the famous Pete Rose, he's long overdue too. So I think those are four guys that should go in, but we all know Pete Rose is probably never going to get in until he, unfortunately, passes away.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. I forgot to mention Rose, you know, with those guys who was first on the ballot in 1992, but with the whole betting scandal with the Reds when he was player/manager, you know, that kind of overshadowed it, but absolutely he belongs as well. And he would obviously be another Philly that would get in and deserves it regardless of who he played for. But, you know, Schilling, it's kind of interesting because I think he was an above-average regular season pitcher. But I think what stands out with him is just his credentials in the postseason. I would say he's probably the second greatest, at least of the past 50 years, In the modern era, the second greatest postseason pitcher ever, besides Madison Bumgarner, who's been especially great in the World Series, whereas Schilling's been a little bit more even in like NLDS, in the Division Series, Championship Series, you know, in the World Series. And Schilling's actually 4-1 with a 2.06. ERA in his career in four World Series, because he had the 93 series, and he actually won three World Series because he won one in 07 as well with the Red Sox over Colorado. And so he won two with the Red Sox, one with Arizona, obviously shared co-MVP, co-World Series MVP in 01 with Randy Johnson with Arizona. And then in 19 career games in the postseason, he was 11-2 with a 2.23 ERA, a whip under one. Just a guy that was very polished and was also very good at keeping his walks down, both postseason and regular season. There were actually times toward the end of his career, especially, which was impressive because he would get into his mid-30s, and when he started to get more run support, because he was on a lot of lousy Phillies teams after the 93 team, where four straight years, actually, he led the league in strikeouts to walks ratio. And one of those times was as a Red Sox, and he had five times total strikeouts to walks leader, two times where he led the league and the lowest WHIP, which is the walks and hits divided by innings pitch. So he was a guy that was very in control on the mound. What stuck out the most to you? I'm not trying to make this about Schilling, but before we kind of segue, we obviously know, with Bonds, the home run king, and before he did steroids, he was kind of the five-tool guy, the threat on the bases as well. And then we obviously know what Clemens can do, and Rose, obviously we've seen some of his highlights, but Schilling, I think, deserves it as well, but he's not as flashy as the other guys. Before we kind of move on, is there anything that sticks out to you about Schilling, either a moment or a statistic, anything that kind of exemplifies, what would make him a Hall of Famer, what should make him a Hall of Famer, I should say, to you?
The way he pitches in clutch games, especially the way he did in Game 6 of the 2004 ALCS at Yankee Stadium with the bloody sock. I thought that was historic. I thought that was heroic. He went out there, he had a bloody sock. He went out there and pitched a gem. And from there on out, the Red Sox cruised along and won World Series that year. And then I think he pitched a great game in the World Series, too, against the Cardinals that year, if I'm not mistaken. So I think it's just that the way he pitches in big games.
Yeah, he was always very well prepared and just on the mound had a vision of what he wanted to do, and he had good stuff. I think he didn't have as good stuff as some of the other guys like a Maddox or a Randy Johnson, his teammate, or another teammate of his, Pedro Martinez. Some of those guys who had just like electrifying stuff or just, really good, three or four type pitches that they could rely on, whereas Schilling more so relied on kind of command and some of the other things. So, it's kind of interesting. So we'll see what happens next year and if some of those guys get in. But the Phillies are preparing for the their upcoming Wall of Fame induction ceremony where Bobby Abreu, who was here 9 years, a lot of times as a center fielder, as a right fielder, played in the outfield from 98 to 06, won the Home Run Derby, I believe, in 05, and actually took it by storm and set records, and I think records that still stand to for today. For the Derby, and as a Philly, was a two-time All-Star, and then went on to play for some other teams. Went on to play for the Yankees and the Halos, and then briefly for the Dodgers and Mets. But with the Phillies, 9 years, almost 900 runs. So you figure almost 100 runs a season. Batting average .303. OBP over 400 at at .416, an OPS over 900, stole a significant amount of bases. He was a guy that I think if he didn't play in the steroid era, he would have been an MVP type guy. He was kind of like a poor man's Barry Bonds because he could hit for average, he could steal bases, he had power, he also had one of the best plate disciplines in the league. There were actually times several times where he, as a Philly, where he led, where he was near the top of the league in walks. But he had almost 10 years where he had 100 or more walks. And I think he, I think if he didn't play in the steroid era, he would have a better Hall of Fame, case. But nonetheless, he's definitely deserving as a Wall of Fame inductee for the Phillies. So, what springs to mind, you know, when you think of Bobby Abreu as a Philly? You know, he kind of, I kind of noticed before the last couple of years that he was here, he was kind of getting a bum rap because a lot of people thought he wasn't the hustling type, and he wasn't like the Chase Utley guy who, you know, he was more quiet and reserved, which is perfectly fine. So, and he kind of got a rap about that, a bad rap about that, but he was an excellent player and he was on a lot of bad Phillies teams. And then, you know, was traded once the team started to turn around. What are your thoughts on not only Abreu's career as a Philly, but his induction into the Wall of Fame coming up next week?
I think it's deserving. I think it's probably well, I mean, well overdue. I thought he was a solid player for the Phillies. He was one of the first guys I grew up watching as a star on the Phillies. Because when I started watching, they were real bad. So he was one of the guys that stood out as a player that was the star on that team. I think one of the controversies about him I've heard on the radio back in the day when I listened to the radio a lot, one of the controversies was he didn't want to lead off. He never wanted to lead off, and fans wanted him to lead off because of his power and a bit of his speed and his on-base percentage and all that, if I remember correctly. That was one of the what am I trying to say? That was one of the negatives on him by the fans on Bobby Abreu. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, he was getting the bum rap, and he wasn't an outspoken guy, but he was kind of like the quiet guy who did everything really good, kind of in the shadow of somebody else. And whereas Burrell wasn't better, but he was kind of more flashier and definitely more outspoken. And there really wasn't this year the Wall of Fame class. I mean, the Phillies will vote in a guy if he's been in here for like 2 years. I feel like there's been guys that have been on the ballot or have been elected in that have been questionable to be in there in the first place. But this year on the ballot for the Wall of Fame, he beat out Abreu, beat out when the ballot came out in February. Bedrock, Steve Bedrosian, who was a relief pitcher in the mid to late 80s. Obviously, pitching coach Rich Doobie on the 08 team. Manager from Jim Fregosi from the 93 team. Relief pitcher Gene Garber. Doug Glanville, who we remember. Outfielder from the late 90s. Outfielder Bake McBride. Placido Polanco, who kind of did a little bit of everything. Scott Rowland, who I don't think belongs, and I think they should just take him off there.
Yeah,
and
I was surprised
Trio.
He was on that. Wow.
Yeah, did you know that? Did you know about these guys being on there, or did you not know of the list until now?
This is the first time I heard about the ballot. Or maybe I forgot.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, the Phillies have had the Wall of Fame going on for a while now. I mean, since 1978 and, you know, a couple of years there were people that didn't get in. You know, Pete Rose was supposed to go in a couple of years ago, and then they had the Centennial team in 83. But otherwise there's been somebody that's gone in every year, Pat Gillick and Roy Halladay going in last year. You know, just because special circumstances. But some of the other guys on there I don't think are deserving. So, you know,
No.
it should be kind of interesting. But, you know, Brady, you had a really good career here. You know, spent the majority of his time in right field, and I don't know about you, but I think if he didn't play in the steroid era, if you look at his stats, 288 home runs, over 1,300 RBIs, 1,363 RBIs, 400 stolen bases. This was for his career, not just as a Philly. 291 batting average, 395 OBP, just under 2,500 career hits, just under 600 career doubles, and his wins above replacement is exactly 60. And then a lot of times, you know, people will measure up to other guys. Because on Baseball Reference, if you look at guys that had similar careers, the top 10 guys that had similar careers to him, nobody's gotten in like a Johnny Damon type of guy, Bernie Williams. So I think a guy that I think he was better than some of those guys that he's kind of paired with based on similarity scores, like a Bernie Williams or Garrett Anderson or a Torrey Hunter, Steve Finley, those types of guys who didn't have as high of a peak. And Abreu won the Silver Slugger as well, but I think he was kind of born in kind of played in the wrong era. So, but, you know, it should be interesting. We'll see what happens with that. And actually, according to Phillies Nation, Cliff Lee will not be in attendance for the upcoming 10-year anniversary of the 09 World Series team. They're having that reunion on alumni weekend. And obviously they acquired Lee 10 years ago. It was a pretty good deal. Was it exactly 10 years yesterday?
I think so. I saw it on Facebook. It was like 10 years yesterday or 10 years on Sunday or something.
Obviously, a deadline deal. I do remember because I was on vacation, and when I got back, I saw that they got the deal. And you know, he's one of the Phillies' more notable deadline deals. And actually, you're absolutely right. July 29th, traded from Cleveland with Ben Francisco, and then, you know, we gave up a good amount of prospects in return. And you know, so the Phillies haven't had a whole lot of like splashes at the deadline over the years. I mean, Roy Halladay was like an off-season deal. You know, Jim Thome was, I believe, an off-season deal. So some of the more recent, besides Lee, some of the more recent, like Oswalt, I think was. I'm not sure if Oswalt was a deadline deal. What's that?
I think he was. He might have been a deadline deal. I think 2010.
Yeah, so some of these guys they came in. Actually, Oswalt was on July 29th as well. July 29th of 2010 from Houston.
Later.
He was also exactly a year later they got Oswalt, and the year before that
we just got Jason Black.
Yeah, so, you know.
Wow.
You know, so some of these guys pan out, some of them don't. And obviously we gave up, you know, Jay Happ for Oswalt, who, you know, we were going more for a veteran arm who could, you know, take us again to the next level, meaning the World Series win again. After a loss in 09, you know, getting Oswalt. And, you know, so some of these guys, you know, it's been kind of interesting because you wonder how it's going to turn out. You know, do you hold on to your prospects? And obviously, you know, some people back in the day wanted to get rid of, like, you know, Utley and Rollins. And obviously that would have been, you know, catastrophic in disastrous if that would have happened. But, you know, so it's kind of interesting. So if you want to kind of, did you have any thoughts? We could kind of segue into some of the deals that the that are going on before this year's deadline, which will wrap up tomorrow at 4. And then the Phillies get Jason Vargas from the Mets. Did you have any thoughts on that as far as your thoughts of at the time of reading it, initial reaction, and then kind of sitting back now and kind of looking at his stats and figuring it out? What are your thoughts on the Vargas move as we kind of segue into the deadline and in the deadline moves?
When I saw that, I said, this is probably a typical Max Muncy deal, because for some reason he likes to make deals with the Mets. Actually, he made like two deals with the Mets at the deadline. So I think it was a typical Max Muncy deal. But looking at it now, I think he's better than what we have. It's kind of an upgrade. And he's a left-handed pitcher who has solid numbers this year, better than Pivetta, better than Vasquez, better than Eflin now, because Eflin has gone to he's gone down. I think Eflin's hurt. I think they need to put him on IL. I think he needs to maybe get some rest, or him on IL, injured list for maybe 2 weeks, get his arm ready, get his arm back in shape, or whatever he needs to do. I think he needs to be out of the rotation right now. But right now, he's just not. He's awful. And then,
yeah.
Vince Velasquez, I mean, we never know what we're going to get from Vince. It's one game he could be great, and then next game he could shit the bed. So, I don't know. But I think Vargas is going to be similar to Smiley. I think he's going to give you innings. He'll eat up some innings. Give you 6-7 innings, if maybe 7. He's a solid pitcher. I mean, it's not what we expected, but I think it's a typical Matt Quintet deal. If that makes sense.
Yeah. So, you know, there's always going to be a lot of like crazy rumors, and I know what we could talk about Yasiel Puig in a second, and you know what the odds of that are, and whether we even need him, because pitching has just been more than bad. It's just been disastrous, especially the starting pitching. I mean, Eichhoff having tendonitis problems now, and he's been atrocious all year. So anything better than him is an upgrade.
Yep.
Velasquez just has great stuff, but just can't seem to find any rhythm, and you know, is a strikeout machine, but he can't do anything else besides that, and can't get acclimated to the bullpen. You put him back in a starter's role, and he hasn't been any better. I feel like they should find somebody to work with him on his mechanics. I don't know what the issue with him is. Because he has great stuff, but he's just too inconsistent. And I'm just not a fan of Arrieta as well. I wish they would dump him. You know, hopefully they can do that. I know after next year, there's 2 years where the team can option him.
Yeah, I
each
think
year
that's
based
sure.
on. Actually, no, it's actually after 2020, because he actually is due to make $20 million next season.
Okay.
And then from 21 to 2022, each year he has a $22.5 million team option, which could increase based on his performances, kind of if they what they average out to. Between last year and this year, and obviously the last 2 years, it's not been a picnic with him. He's just been, you know, he struggled with some injuries, but besides that, I mean, he's been a below average pitcher. 4.19 ERA, losing record. You know, you can buy into that because he's just been too inconsistent and allows a lot of hits. What do you make of Arrieta? What should they do with him? Because we're trying to figure out like some of these deadline pieces, and you're also trying to figure out who's going to be in your rotation for next year. Like, you know, who do you try to trade off or release in the off season, and just kind of, you know, pay them their salary and just be done with it. But what should they do with Arrieta from now onward, considering he's due $20 million after this year?
I think they need to try to trade him in the off season and see what they can get. See if they can get another salary dump player that they can get. Maybe just trade garbage for garbage, if that makes sense. I mean, I don't know. The Yankees need a starting pitcher. Maybe the Yankees would give a trade for him. But I think he needs to. I mean, if Clint Beck can pull off some miracle and trade him by tomorrow, I doubt that. But in the off season, I think they need to cut ties with him. I think it's not working out. He doesn't fit this team. He always throws everybody under the bus. Besides himself, he's not a team player in my mind. At least not with us. Yeah, I think we just need to part ways. I think it's time to part ways. If we can trade him for something, great. I hope we can.
Yeah,
I
don't think we're going to have any suitors for him. So I think the best option would be, unless somehow some schmuck of an opposing GM, you know, offers anything on the plate, you know, for Arrieta, you know, if they need, like, yeah, I don't know what role that
veteran.
What he would fill. That would be the only thing, because he's not a locker room guy. He's not a guy who's in his prime. He's not even a serviceable number three pitcher. You know, honestly, he's been, you know, closer to a number four, number five guy. And, you know, the Phillies start a six-game homestand tonight, 7:05. Versus San Francisco, three-game series, after losing 2 out of 3 to Atlanta. What do you make of the series tonight for San Francisco, who's, you know, been hot as of late? There was a time up until a few games ago where San Francisco was 17-4 in their last 21 games, and it looked like they were kind of, you know, lost in the water and you know, going to be wheeling at the deadline and going to be sellers. And now it looks like kind of role reversal, where even though Bumgarner is going to be a free agent, you know, people are kind of around the water cooler, around the hot wire, that they're going to be, San Francisco is going to be buyers. So, you know, the Phillies coming into the series tonight should be pretty interesting, because two teams that are vying for playoff spots, and, you know, a team that's kind of barely staying afloat in the Phillies, and, you know, that's a team
San Francisco,
who's a couple games above 500, you know, is also looking for playoff positioning. And Drew Smyly is actually making his second career start as a Philly tonight versus Tyler Beede. So neither guy has been been great this year, but Smyly had a solid debut on July 21st at Pittsburgh with the Phillies, where he allowed only one run in six innings. So hopefully he can kind of build on that. Before we kind of get into some of the deals, what are your thoughts on this series coming up and expecting? What we can expect from San Francisco?
I think this is another important series. I mean, the Giants are only 2.5. I think they're 2.5 games back from the second wild card. So that makes them, I believe, 1.5 games back from us. So this is a crucial series in the wild card standings now, because if San Francisco wins this series, they could jump us. If they're 54-52 and they win this series, we could fall 3-4 games back from the wild card. So this is another crucial series. So, and I think maybe tonight, if we win, I mean, maybe this determines what Matt Quintana does tomorrow at the deadline. If we stay pat or we try to make another trade for another pitcher or hitter. So I think tonight's a crucial game too. Right? Besides the series, tonight's a crucial game in determining if we make any trades tomorrow.
Yeah, San Francisco's 2.5 games behind Chicago for the second NL wild card spot. Phillies are in it. Phillies are Phillies are a game and a half back behind Washington for second place in the East, and they're in the hunt for the both wild card positioning. I mean, regardless of how you look at it, there's still almost two months of games left to be played after the series concludes. But
yep.
It would be a good start if we had a sweep to kind of winding down the season. And then you kind of see some of the other teams beat up on each other, like Milwaukee and Chicago and Washington and Arizona, teams that are kind of also vying for spots, you know, ever since the addition, you know, so many years ago, recently, of the second wild card. It's definitely given a lot more teams more hope. So in this case, you know, teams that are in August, that would be like 9 or 10 games back, 11 games back of the first wild card spot. You know, they wouldn't be in any position to be in the playoffs. And you know, now it's kind of interesting. You know, I still think the Phillies, you know, need to go out and try to get somebody, but it's tough because, you know, who do you? It's a poker deal because, you know, you don't want to give up too much, and you want to decide who's valuable and who's just valuable enough. As you know, it's, you know, deadline deals can be either hit or miss, and the Phillies are kind of working towards, you know, adding on more. So, did you hear anything today? Because I saw that yesterday, Klentak admitted that with each passing day, David Robertson, his return is becoming less and less encouraging. And certain guys, you know, they got cash as well for Vargas. And, you know, so it doesn't look like they're getting a whole lot of big deals. Have you heard anything else, any rumors, and anything that you would like to see from them going forward, you know, in the next, 26 hours, picking up somebody before the season ends?
I heard one interesting name I heard was, I think two, the closer for White Sox, it's Carmen. I heard the Phillies are really interested in him. That's probably because of David Robinson, I'm assuming. But before that, we didn't hear that they were interested in him. But with this David Robinson news, I think it's crucial. Maybe they should trade for him, because I think he would add to the bullpen. I think you move Hector to the eighth and you have him in the ninth, and maybe Nick Pivetta has been pretty good in the bullpen since he moved to the bullpen. So I think it could be a crucial piece in in the rest of the season in the bullpen. I know he's been
garbage
at the start, but
Alex Colome for Chicago has been really good this year. I didn't make the All-Star team, but he's kind of flown under the radar because the Chi Sox have have been so far out of any race this year, any pennant race. Any division or wild card race, and he would be a guy that would definitely fit the closing role. And I know you were talking about Yasiel Puig, but I've heard rumblings that he's kind of like Arrieta, where he's not the best guy to be around in the locker room. And to be honest, we need as much pitching as possible. So, Colome would be a better option. But what were you thinking as far as Puig? Because kind of the lineup, there's not a whole lot of – you have Puig as a right fielder and Harper's in right field. Where would you put him? What were your thoughts on that? Because I know you kind of expressed some interest to me and some other people that the Phillies should go at it, or the way I interpreted it, that you thought the Phillies should go after him. What were you thinking there, or what are your thoughts on that?
The rumors have it that we're heavily interested in him. I think it would be a package with Tanner Roller or Alex Wood. So, and I think you can play Puig in right in center field. He could play center field too. So, and then you move Henry to third, and then when Jay Bruce, and then you have Haseley in left. So, or you can move Puig to left field and Haseley to center. And when Jay Bruce comes back, he'll be your match there off the bench. That's what we've got Dave Bruce for, to be that bench guy. So McCutcheon got hurt, so he would be that role guy. He would be that bench player that we traded for. So, but I don't think Bruce should be an everyday player because he's been hurt a lot. So I don't think he's durable to be everyday anymore.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because the Phillies, they can only but upgrade the rotation, but you also have holes to fill in the bullpen too. Guys are getting injured. Guys don't have – and you also need to have guys fill their role. That's what's – that's what was so important. Charlie, as a manager, was good at that and kind of everybody knew what role they had, not only in the rotation but in the bullpen, but, beyond that. And I kind of feel like that's kind of gotten forgotten. I'm not going to get into that, but the Phillies could definitely strongly benefit from a real closer, and it would only, significantly improve and bolster their bullpen. So was there anybody else that you thought the Phillies should look at? Because Tanner Roark, there was some rumblings about him, and he's been with Washington for over 5 years now, but he's been not that great this year. So, and he led the league in losses that last year, and was even worse last year than this year. So I don't want Roark. I don't want Puig. Vargas was, I think, a minor upgrade. Same with there were some other guys I thought they were looking at, but, I think they're kind of going another way with things, whereas originally they were kind of looking at kind of adding to the lineup. Now they might be – now Klentak might be focusing attention solely to the pitching and addressing that. But was there anybody else that looked interesting that they could acquire as far as a pitcher before the deadline?
Zach Greinke, but it depends on if – but the problem with him is he has a no trade clause and he doesn't like to pitch in the big market. That's, he has anxiety, I think, personal things. So that's the issue with him. Obviously, we would love to have him because he's a good bullpen. He's a good rotation guy. I think, you know, he's 36 years old. I think he would be a major upgrade in his rotation. Add some veteran leadership. But I think he has a no trade clause and he doesn't like to pitch in big market. So I don't know if Greinke would waive his no trade clause to come here. Then you have Matthew Boyd, who we talked about last week, who pitched against us last week. He pitched really well against us last week. So he's another name to keep an eye on, too. So it's going to be interesting 24 to 26 hours. That's way near, 24 to 26 hours until the 4 p.m. trade deadline tomorrow. There's going to be a lot of rumors, a lot of people tweeting, and it's going to be like the Harper thing all over again where every rumor is going to be spreading and speculations, and it's going to be fun, but it's going to be, you have to watch out for the rumors that are out there too, because they are just rumors.
Yeah, you never know what to expect, and I'm guessing you think the Phillies are a long shot to land Bumgarner, who's probably not even anymore on the market now. I know he's a free agent, but you don't think the Giants would theoretically, if the Phillies presented them with, you know, some kind of, you know, interesting offer, you don't think they would give him up? You think that that would be a ball?
I think it might actually depend on tonight. If maybe San Francisco loses, maybe they rethink that. But then again, it's only 24 hours. It's only 24 hours, so it's a real tough decision for them because Bumgarner is a fan favorite. He's been the leader on that team for almost 10 years. So it's going to be hard for the Giants to part ways with a guy like that who's been the face of the franchise for a long time. So I can understand why they're hesitant into trading him. It's like Baltimore last year was hesitant in trading Manny Machado. He was the face of the franchise for so long, but they had to because they were so bad. But Giants since the All-Star break has been 17-4. So they came back from the wrist. They've risen from the dead, I guess. It's going to be interesting.
You had mentioned a couple hours ago, a couple minutes ago, that the prospect of possibly landing Boyd from Detroit. It was actually reported a couple hours ago on MLB Trade Rumors that according to USA Today's Bob Nightingale, Detroit hasn't really received yet an enticing enough offer for Boyd, and that Nightingale believes that Boyd's going to stay put with Detroit, and that it seems like that they're asking a little bit too much for him, which is probably fine because he's not that great of a pitcher. He would be a very minor upgrade over what will we have, but I would rather see us try to develop some pitchers rather than go for it all. And, if Bumgarner is presented on the table, that might be the only one I would go for because, you know, like you said, with Greinke, it's kind of a crapshoot, and some of the other guys seem to be staying put. And not only that, but with the second wild card, that also comes into play. But it should be interesting. The Phillies are, always, over the last, 10, 15 years, definitely looking into making moves. And Cliff Lee obviously helped. Roy Oswalt helped. And some other guys on top of that. So it should be interesting. If you wanted to add unless you want to add anything else to that, I wanted to get into the Hall of Fame ballot for next year, because that was one thing that I forgot to mention. The potential 2020 Baseball Hall of Fame ballot, because there's going to be some newcomers on the ballot who retired recently and haven't been eligible till now. Probably only one that will get in. Derek Jeter will be on the ballot for the first time next year, and he's, I'm sure, to probably get significant of the votes. And I would think he would be a first-round Hall of Famer. So it'd be kind of interesting. So, yeah, you don't think there's going to be any qualms, any issues with voters giving Jeter 75% of the vote next year? I mean, you know, 310 career average, over 3,400 career hits. Obviously, the countless amount of World Series, I believe five-time World Series winner, 2000 World Series MVP, and, you know, has over 70 wins above replacement, was an overall solid leader in the locker room, leading those Yankees to championships, but also the class act, won multiple gold gloves, five gold gloves, five silver slugger awards, and then made over, made the All-Star team on the American League 14 times. I don't think there's going to be an issue with him getting in. The question is some of the other guys, because Schilling, I think 10 years now, I think they trended. It used to be 15 years was the maximum. As long as you got at least 5% of the vote, you could stay on the ballot for 15 years max. And I believe they trimmed it to 10 now, which I think is a good idea. And I think Larry Walker next year will be his last chance in getting in. Like I mentioned, this year he got just over 50% of the vote. Last couple of years he's gotten a little bit more significance in terms of vote increase, 54.6 this year. I think he would be, if he were ever to be getting in, it would be a veterans committee. I don't think he'll get in. I think Schilling could, as long as he keeps his mouth shut enough, could get in, because the class for that's coming in is pretty weak. I mean, I love Cliff Lee, but he's not a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you think he's a Hall of Famer.
No. He's a guy that when he was in his prime, he was one of the best pitchers in the game, but not enough to be a Hall of Famer. I mean, he only has 143 career wins as a starter. He had a great year in 08 with Cleveland, and he had some great years with the Phillies. But he was a fun guy to watch, but not a Hall of Famer. Bobby Abreu, I think if he had played a little bit longer and not in the steroid era, he would be a Hall of Fame case if he didn't play in the steroid era. But he's overlooked by so many guys that it's going to be tough for him. He could be a guy that could be a veterans committee guy if things go right for him. And there's really not a lot of other, like Adam Dunn's not going to get a whole lot. Raul Labaña is another former Philly, is on the ballot next year, potentially. Paul Konerko, who has almost 500 career home runs. He's an interesting case because he has almost 2,500 career hits, and he has 439 career home runs. For a power hitter, he has a decent average, 279. What do you think of him as a Hall of Fame case? Because he's going to be potentially on the ballot next year.
Paul Konerko, I don't think he'll get in right away, but I think he'll probably get like 50% of the vote next year and then increase up every year, maybe 4 or 5 years from now he'll get in. He's one of those guys that we'll have to wait about 4 or 5 years too. I think Derek Jeter is the only one that, from next year's class is going to be getting in. I think he'll get over 90% of the vote, actually.
I agree with that.
What do you?
Yeah, I think Schilling's best bet. You know, without looking at the 2021 class and going too far in advance, being that next year's class, next year's ballot is potentially extremely weak, and the fact that only one guy that'll be there on the first time could get in. Schilling's best bet would be get in next year, you know, increase his votes by a little bit. But, you know, as you know, you say the wrong thing. So, but it's kind of interesting. I don't think Konerko is a Hall of Famer. I think he's a Hall of Very Good player, which means a guy that's just kind of, you know, a step lower. And I don't think he's close to making it either because he's a defensive liability. I know Edgar Martinez wasn't a guy that played a lot of defense and he got in, but he made up for it so much on offense. And, you know, by that, I mean, not just home runs, but as you know, Edgar Martinez was such a dedicated hitter. Konerko just really, all he really did was hit home runs. Occasionally he had a couple years where he hit over 300, but then he had some years where he declined as well. So it wasn't as steep of a decline for a power hitter as like a McGuire or Ryan Howard, you know. But some of the other guys, Clemens and Bonds, what do you see them doing next year? Because obviously Clemens over 350 wins, we know his. You know, we know his resume and, you know, 7 Cy Young Awards, 2 Triple Crowns and won a couple World Series and 7 ERA titles as well. Do you see him getting him in next year? And what it's going to be, I guess, you know, since Clemens and Bonds are kind of, grouped together, do you see one guy getting in more than the other out of Clemens and Bonds?
I think both are not going to get in this year. I think they're going to wait until both of them are in their last year of eligibility. Unfortunately, I think they're going to make them both wait. I know that sounds stupid and it shouldn't be that way, but unfortunately, I think that's what's going to happen. What year of eligibility are they both in?
Clemens.
Is it 5?
Next year will be his 8th, and I'll look at Bonds in a second. But Clemens, you know, has been there. You know, has been on the ballot enough where you would have thought that he got it. But there were some years where, you know, the ballots were kind of stacked. So next year, I think we can agree that that's the year where Schilling, Clemens, Bonds, you know, all three of them, next year is their 8th year on the ballot out of 10. And then obviously you got to factor in Jeter. He's going to get the majority of the votes. I definitely could see Jeter getting like 92-93% of the ballots. The percentage of the ballot.
Absolutely.
But outside of that, I'm not sure if anybody else will get in. Do you think Larry Walker will get in? He's a guy who was such a great player, but he was kind of overshadowed by playing in such a, you know, hitter friendly park in Coors Field. But he had some good years. You know, he was on that 94 Expos team that was so good. He had some good years with the Expos. He had some good years with the Cardinals. And then he also won an MVP in 97 where he had 49 home runs, 130 RBIs, and, you know, his stats were off the charts. But if you look at Larry Walker's stats, 383 home runs, 1311 RBIs, 313 batting average, he was a pretty good defender too. He had a positive defensive wins above replacement, which means he didn't cost his team wins, you know, when he was fielding the ball. So I think he could have a decent shot of getting in, you know, over 2,000 hits. You know, when you look at his resume, he was a guy that regardless of playing in that stadium, you know, 81 games a year for so long, he was still consistent. He was a 280 hitter with Montreal and a 280 hitter with St. Louis. So he's kind of a guy that you wonder how much it's tough to really separate his influence from Coors Field. But what are your thoughts on Walker's on his future on the ballot the next few years?
I think he'll get it, maybe get in as a veteran in the veterans committee. Maybe. What year is he eligible? Is he in
his he'll be in his eighth year. Actually, no, I'm sorry. He'll be in his last year of eligibility next year. So if he doesn't get in next year, I believe they changed it. So he doesn't get 75% next year. The only way, obviously, he can get in is his veterans committee. And that might be probably the best route for him, since I think Jeter, Schilling, Clemens, and Bonds will, and you know, some of the other guys like Fiscal and Manny Ramirez will be taking up some of the other ballots. You know, and there's only so many. So it's going to be tough for Walker to get in. And another interesting thing is, you know, Bobby Abreu had an interesting career if you look at his stats. Do you think that he could be a guy that gets onto the Veterans Committee because he won a Gold Glove, Silver Slugger? He didn't win a lot of awards, but if you look at his stats and his, you know, his peak, he's with there with, you know, a lot of guys. So what would you say is Abreu's future on the ballot?
I think you're right. I think he could get in as a veteran committee too. So I think he was a solid guy. I think, as you said, if he wasn't playing in the Hall in the Sarah era, I think he would wouldn't be overlooked. So I think he gets in as a veteran. After his eligibility is off, I mean over.
The thing that's going to hurt his chances is guys like Schilling, where they were above average players. Schilling, what kind of gets him over the hump, theoretically, is his postseason numbers. It's something. My point is, there was something for a guy like Schilling, where if he's close to the Hall of Fame or if he's, you know, kind of on the edge, something impressed him that bumped him over the edge. And I don't know that Abreu has that. I mean, he had that impressive home run derby, but that's a home run derby. That's not something that's counted. And, you know, he didn't win a whole lot of awards. And that's why I say it's tough for him, because, you know, if you kind of thumb over his stats, he had, I believe, 9 years where he had at least 100 RBIs, and he had 6 years with 30 or more stolen bases, and then he had over 5 years where he hit 300 or better, including 335 in 1999. So for him, I think if he had a batting average that was a little bit higher, you know, like 300, you know, a little bit closer to like where Edgar Martinez was, that might get him in. But I think Abreu, well, I think he deserves it. I don't think he's going to get in on the Baseball Writers Association of America ballot or the Veterans Committee. One last thing before we kind of do our social media plugs. Did you believe that Harold Baines belonged, and did you think that any other guys belonged this year? Omar Vizquel didn't get in, and there were some other guys as well. I'll have to look back at the ballot, but I believe Manny Ramirez, you know, was on the ballot this year and got like 20%, but obviously didn't get enough. Were there any guys that you felt should have, you know, got more votes or should have gotten in that didn't, or anything that you want to wrap up by saying?
I think if Harold Baines got in, I think Jimmy Rollins deserves to be in. Because I think if you compare those two numbers, I think Jimmy has better numbers than Harold Baines. And nothing against Harold Baines. But you can make a case for Jimmy Rollins going to the Hall of Fame when he's eligible, which is probably, I think, 2023 or 24, whenever he retired. I think you can make a case for Jimmy Rollins. what do you think? You think Jimmy could get in? Maybe not as a ballot, but maybe a veterans ballot someday?
I believe Rollins will be eligible in 2022. I think he's another great Hall of Fame player, which means that I don't think he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, but he was a guy that was close enough where he was a good player, but he didn't do enough. A lot of times voters go by like a round number, you know, like 500 home runs or 300 career average, 300 career wins or more, you know what I mean? That type of stuff. And
yeah.
Rollins is a leadoff hitter. He didn't draw a lot of walks. So he had to have a lot of hits, and he didn't have 3,000 hits. He just missed 2,500 hits. He just missed 500 stolen bases. He didn't have a good average. He didn't have an all. The only thing that was going for him was the longevity and the stolen bases. And his stolen bases kind of knocked off at the very end there. I know he was injured, you know, last couple of years. You know, there were some years where he missed significant time. But I think if he had played a few more years, if he was able to, you know, got 500 stolen bases, and if his average was closer to like 270, and then if he had, you know, 2,600, 2,700, 2,800 hits, and then, you know, over 1,500 runs, he was also just shy of that, then I think he would have a better case. I just don't think that he's a guy, and I love Jimmy, but I know that if you look at like similar batters like Barry Larkin is in, like an Alan Trammell, Roberto Alomar, Ryan Sandberg, Joe Morgan, and then
Ozzie Smith.
You know, and then you had just mentioned Harold Baines. So guys like that, I just wouldn't put him in. I think it should be a small list for guys that really have had like longevity and, you know, had a peak, but also had good years beyond their peak. And I think if you look at, you know, Jimmy's years after his peak, which was like, if you look at his peak, which was around, like
2007,
01 to 08, because he won the MVP in 07. Usually it's around a 6 or 7 year peak they judge it by. And then after that, if you look at it, from like 2011 to when he retired in 2016, which I know was with Chicago, I know he played with the Dodgers as well. The last 6 years of his career, he only hit .247, and even if he had like a .250 or .260 batting average, he only had a .315 on base percentage. As we know, he was never a guy for a leadoff hitter who was getting on base a lot, drawing a lot of walks, which, you know, was kind of his, kind of the thing that you know, kind of halted some of his ability to do better. Let me just put it this way. I think that's going to be one of the reasons that halts his chances at getting in and leaving him stagnant on the ballot, because just some of his stats and measurements don't line up. But so I obviously hope he gets in. We can talk in the future more about some of the other Phillies getting in and what their chances are. I know we talked about some of it in the past, but you know, it's tough because Howard, Ali, and Rollins, they were both great players in their primes. Obviously, two MVPs, a Rookie of the Year. Obviously, you know, World Championship for all of them, All-Stars, Silver Sluggers, Gold Gloves. But they didn't have a long enough peak. And I think Utley, out of the three of them, was the best player. And I think if he had sustained his health long enough and, you know, didn't suffer as many injuries, it's a shame. I think he would have played long enough where he would have had a legitimate Hall of Fame case, especially at his position. But, you know, we'll see what happens down the line. So, you can call us in the future for people that are listening live at 1-646-564-9836. Call into the show with your questions or any comments or remarks that you have, or if you want to live tweet us while we're on the show with any response to any topics that we're going to be discussing or any questions that you want discussed or answered, at Philly SP Podcast on Twitter. That's the Philly Sports Passion Podcast, which is at Philly SP Podcast. Or you can tweet us individually at Big E Jacinto or at Kyle_Lutz_. Those three accounts each week. Usually we do it Tuesday around 2. And Eric, did you also want to plug in a couple other shows as well, or the other show that you did on Friday that you continue to do?
This Friday, this Saturday, we're continuing our prediction show with Doug Hummer and some other people. Last Friday, we did the NFC East and the AFC East prediction show. We went through each of the 8 team schedules of those 2 divisions and ran down if we thought they were going to win and lose. So go ahead and listen to that. It was a good show. This week, we're doing the NFC North and AFC North on Saturday at 8 o'clock. So if you're interested in joining, just call in the show and join the conversation. And that goes for you too, Kyle, if you wanted to join. And I want to give a shout out to Wrestling with Reality Podcast. They did our new logo, so check that out on Twitter. It's a Twitter logo too. It's not exactly on all the platforms yet, but I'm trying to work that out. It's on Apple right now, but the other platforms trying to still figure that out. But
we also
did our new image.
Yeah, he did our new image, and we also have an audio promo coming up for the show and for a couple other shows, doing cross promotion. And we had some people that were great that were helping out with promoting on social media and spreading the word and showing support, and obviously, you know, can do nothing but help in return. And you know, so did you also want to plug the wrestling show that you do?
Oh yeah, me and Doug did Unscripted Wrestling on Sunday night this past Sunday. We did a watch along. We did we watched the Hogan heel turn in 96 at Bash at the Beach. Check that out too. It was a good podcast. I'd like to give another shout out to the Overtime Heroics. They have a website. It's overtimeheroics.com. It's a sports forum where you can post anything about sports and Vulture Podcast and all that. It's a good website. I mean, I joined it. And that's it. Do you have any more plugs, Kyle?
Now, just, you know, in both shows, you get some good sports debates and talk about the weekly sports topics, especially in Philadelphia. And, you know, like I mentioned, tweet us out before and during and after the show. You know, and you can reach us on there or by either of our personal Twitter accounts, and we can answer questions or any topics, debates that people want to go over. And also, you can also listen free live online, as well as shows that have already aired on our Blog Talk Radio site, which is blogtalkradio.com/Philly Sports Passion. And again, hit us up on Twitter at Philly SP Podcast. That's the Philly Sports Passion Podcast. And join us next week at 2 o'clock. For more topics,
it'll probably be Monday.
We'll do a Monday show around 2 o'clock, and we'll get into some Eagles preseason, some more Phillies, especially post deadline, and get into some other things as well as you know, plugs and any questions that people have. So tune in until next time for the Philly Sports Passion Podcast, and thank you for tuning in.
Yep, thank you. Just listen to us on all the major platforms. Oh.